A new approach to training doctors, the University of Connecticut's M-Delta curriculum. Welcome to the 199th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get that delightful instant when you can high-five the person next to you and shout, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the best program for you. I recently saw an article about a highly innovative approach to medical education launching with this year's entering class at the University of Connecticut, and that curriculum is called M-Delta. When I reached out to UConn, the head of the curriculum reform asked me for a call and provided more information about the new curriculum. It was absolutely fascinating. Fortunately, she and her colleagues agreed to join me for this episode of Admission Straight Talk, and you'll be able to judge for yourself if I was exaggerating or not, but I'm pretty confident you're not going to think I was exaggerating. Our guests today are Dr. Suzanne Rose, Senior Associate Dean for Education and Professor of Medicine at UConn, Dr. Christine Thatcher, Associate Dean for Medical Education and Assessment at UConn, and Dr. Thomas Regan, Assistant Dean of Admissions and Student Affairs. Dr. Rose, Dr. Thatcher, and Dr. Regan, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
All right. Glad to speak with all of you today. Let's start with the first question for Dr. Rose. Can you give an overview of the three major phases of UConn's M-Delta curriculum? And then let's dive into the most distinctive part of it, stage one or exploration.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting us to talk with you today. I hope you'll hear from us our passion for our new curriculum. M-Delta, I should first of all tell you, is making a difference in education, learning, and teaching across the curriculum. And it is our bold and innovative curriculum reform effort that started probably 4 years ago now, maybe even five, to really think about cutting-edge medical education for doctors of the future. So our curriculum reform effort has been implemented, as you noted, in August with the incoming class of 2020. And they are now in what we are calling stage one of the curriculum. So we have divided the curriculum into three stages. Stage one, as many schools are doing, is no longer 2 years long. It's now 18 months long. And it is, I'll tell you more about stage one after I give you this brief overview.
Great.
But it's a time of study where the class is together, and actually our students co-learn with our dental school students. And so we have a very innovative curriculum, which I'll expand upon, which really has eliminated lectures in favor of active learning modalities. Stage two now will begin in the second year, in March of the second year. We are fleshing out the final renditions and how that will look in stage two, but we'll probably will have a 12-week introduction to the foundations of clinical medicine or immersion in the clinical realm. Our students will have flexible time for board study, for electives, for selectives, and for required rotations. We are also coupling a few of our rotations so that we can have longitudinal didactics where our rotations can work together and the students can think together across discipline topics. So stage two will last through June of the third year of school, and then in stage three, the final stage, our students will have some required advanced clinical immersion rotations, but they will also be involved in a scholarly project, which they are starting actually to learn about in their very first year of medical school. And they will also be involved in other projects, such as perhaps an involvement in the community and public health and education. And we hope that some of our students will become active teachers. Now, all of our students will be getting a public health certificate. That's a program that, again, I can expand upon a little bit later. But our students will have time throughout the curriculum to really be immersed in public health systems, population health, and health sciences. So we're very excited about these three stages, and I'll stop there to see if you have any questions, and I'm happy to tell you more about stage one.
Right. Why don't we dive into stage one now, okay?
Okay, so first of all, you know, we're big on acronyms here, as you'll hear. Not only do we have M-Delta, but we now have our stages of the curriculum, and we call them Excite, stage one for exploration, 2 is clinical immersion, 3 is transformation, and 4 is entrustment. So I'm going to tell you about the exploration stage, which again lasts for about 18 months. So in our exploration stage, our sort of centerpiece of the curriculum is a team-based learning curriculum. It's both patient-centered and case-based and student-centered. So students will be in a team. We are following the TBL pedagogy where they have to sort of explore a topic beforehand. They have goals and objectives that have to be achieved. They come into class, they take an IRAT, an individualized readiness assurance test, which counts, and then they take the same test with their team. It's called a TRAT. And the professor and the content experts at the TBL can see where the students might have weaknesses, and our content experts can expand upon some of those weaknesses and help our students learn some difficult concepts. That's followed by application exercises, and it's very fun, where the students in a question format will have an exercise that they have to explore, and they have to come to an answer. And the fun part about TBL is that there's simultaneous reporting from all of the tables in the room. So they'll hold up a little placard that will have the answer, A, B, C, D, sometimes E, and the professor can look right away and see if the answer is B, and everybody answers B and knows the answer, you can go right on. But if, let's say, the answer is B and half of the class said A, and you know, and another quarter said C, then you know that that's a problem, and you have to really explain why the answer was B. So our TBL curriculum spans 50 units. We have 50 cases that will be presented to our students, and our hope is to actually have the case presentation in a teaching electronic medical record. We are part of the AMA grant, and as part of that, our project is to use the teaching EMR, and one way that we're doing that is by embedding the cases in our TBL, what we call the core course, case-oriented essentials, into the electronic record.
Now, you said 50 cases. Is that throughout the 18 months?
That's right. So, and Dr. Thatcher can tell you about our innovative schedule, but okay, we have blocks that are 10 weeks long, followed by 2 weeks of what we call leap period, and I'll let Dr. Thatcher tell you about leap.
Right.
And each of those 12-week periods constitute sort of a larger unit within the program. So, so in addition to that, I just wanted to let you know that there are other courses that the students take in Exploration Stage 1. We have an integrated human anatomy lab with virtual anatomy lab. We have purchased 4 virtual anatomy tables, and we've incorporated radiology into that curriculum, and we have radiology stations as well as ultrasound. So that course is called our Fab Lab for Fabric of Anatomy and Biology. Mm-hmm. We have our DOC course, our Delivery of Clinical Care. That's the introduction to doctoring and the patient-physician relationship. We have a course called CLIC. It's Clinical Longitudinal Immersion in the Community, and that's where our students spend a half a day in a physician's office, usually a primary care office, and it's a half a day immersed in patient care alongside one of our community physicians or one of our teaching faculty. Another course that we have is called the Clinical Home. This is another innovation where our students and teams go to one of our affiliate hospitals and they explore the healthcare system. So they need to know, like, who does what in the hospital. And they may have a project, such as to follow somebody who comes into the emergency room with, let's say, a broken leg, and they have to follow that patient either virtually or perhaps in real time to radiology, maybe to the OR. Mm-hmm. Or they might see an elderly patient on another week who is being discharged from the hospital to a nursing home, and they would get involved in the discharge planning of that patient in terms of what does the nurse do, what does the social worker do. And so that's an innovative course that we've implemented for our first-year students. And then finally, we have our Vitals course. I think another very innovative course is our Vertically Integrated Teams Aligned in Learning and Scholarship. And there's a couple of innovative pieces about this course. So it's where our students learn about population health, and they also learn things like biostatistics. A couple of very innovative pieces about this course. One is that students are in teams across the continuum of medical school. So we will have first-year students with second and third and fourth-year students once we implement the entire curriculum. We also have dental students, and we bring in other interprofessional partners into the VITALS teams throughout the course of that offering. The other thing that I think is very innovative is that we have very set goals and objectives for that course, but we are very flexible with the curriculum in there. We want to really make sure that we cover emerging topics and trends. So if, let's say, gun violence, if something happens in the news and we need to talk about gun violence, we can use that as a way to accomplish the objectives in the course, or if it's Ebola virus. So there are a lot of ways that we can use current events to explore some of the topics that are really important in public health. There are other components, but that kind of gives you the gist.
Okay, that's fascinating. I did make some notes for questions, but before I get to my other questions, I'd like to move on and hear from Dr. Thatcher about assessment in this team-based learning environment. Dr. Rose, you talked about it a bit, but maybe you can go into a little bit more, Dr. Thatcher, and also about the 10 weeks and the 2 weeks and that whole thing.
Sure. So during the 10-week block, there are, as Dr. Rose mentioned, IRATs and TRATs each week for the core course and for the VITALS course. The IRAT is the individualized readiness assessment test, and the TRAT is the team readiness assessment test. And both of those scores help the student throughout the block gauge how well they're doing and in each of the different modules that comprise that 10-week block. At the end of the 10-week block, all of the courses put together an integrated exam. So it's kind of like a final exam day, the first day of the two-week intersession that we're calling LEAP, which is Learning, Enhancement, and Assessment Period. The LEAP period is 2 weeks in between each block and starts out with an assessment that, as I said, is integrated. It's a holistic assessment to see how students have learned these integrative topics across the different courses. We then give them a day for wellness while we get the grading done, and then we bring the students back for a day of scholarship and for a day of coaching and for a day of career exploration. And during that day, the students find out how well they did in their courses over the last 10-week block, and they have the opportunity, if they've done well, to go ahead and take an enhancement that we call an individualized learning opportunity, or an ILO, as Dr. Rose said, we like our acronyms. And these are 5-day enhancements that students can take in a variety of different subjects that range from humanities to clinical shadowing to research experiences at the bench. And if a student did not do well in any of their courses, this is their opportunity to get 5 days of intensive study alongside some tutoring and faculty expertise to bring them up on their gaps in learning, and then we reassess them at the end of that 2-week period to make sure that students are moving on to the next block and have the chance to be successful. If a student still doesn't perhaps do quite as well as we would like them to at the end of that 2-week block, there's additional opportunity for them to remediate in the summer, so that by the time they leave stage one, we feel that everyone has been appropriately prepared.
Is the first IRAT a test on acronyms?
Yes. It is. So in the launch period during the summer, we do have a TBL on TBL. And we may not ask them on the acronyms, but we do get, we have students, Dr. Reagan will talk to you a bit about what they do in the admissions process and how we introduce them to the IRAT. Yeah, but then we also teach them how to do it during the launch.
Okay, great. So basically, now on our call, we had a preliminary call last week. You talked about how part of the goal for the 2 weeks period is, one, to give students an opportunity to pursue individual interests, but also to try and remove the stigma from remediation. Do you want to dive into that a little bit? And whoever wants to address that.
So I can address that. It's Susie here. I think one of the things that we're trying to really enhance in our students is that learning medicine is really a lifelong process. And, you know, some of the things that I learned in medical school don't even exist now, and some things we never heard about. So as an example, you know, hepatitis C wasn't even hepatitis C when I was a medical student. It was non-A, non-B hepatitis,
really?
Just to give one example. So you have to constantly be able to discard kind of old things and be able to accept new theories and new science. And we wanted to make learning and needing to enhance your learning something that's acceptable. One thing that we're doing to do that is we actually are establishing a learning center, and we're putting it smack dab in the middle of the library so that there's no stigma to going and getting a little help, whether it's for test taking, whether it's, you know, to learn material a little bit better. And I think, you know, kind of talking about that is one way to do that. Another way to do that is really to redefine our schedule, to show the students that after they take the holistic exam, nobody's perfect. And so you get to see, you get the feedback on what you need to improve on. Everybody can improve, nobody's perfect. And those students who need to improve a little bit more, we give them time and support to do so. And they have another chance to be able to achieve really great success. And so that's really the environment that we're trying to foster. Really want to set the bar very high for competency, that you really need to know this stuff. It's really important. And then help the students get there.
Okay, great. I mean, I think that's, I once interviewed somebody who really struggled in medical school, and it would, you know, it seems like fortunately in a fairly supportive environment. Obviously, anybody who gets to medical school is bright. So sometimes you just need a little help, and it's nice to know that it's being given. Dr. Rose, can you go a little bit more into what actually one does or learns in delivery of clinical care in the medical home section of the curriculum? And what are some of the opportunities in the individualized learning opportunities?
So the delivery of clinical care, you know, we've had a doctoring course here. So we've really enhanced that to include more clinical skills development. So we have a wonderful clinical skills facility. Many schools have that, where we have standardized patients or what we call patient instructors who are available to both teach and assess our students. And we use our clinical skills center. Many places only use it for assessment, but we use it actually to teach clinical skills. So this is a place where students will learn the skills to interact with patients and to examine patients. We also are very fortunate to have developed a new simulation center, which is very, very near our clinical skills center, and we're trying to build opportunities for students to work in our clinical skills center and our sim center simultaneously using simulation with standardized patients or with patient instructors. So, and that's fairly unique in terms of using simulation early in medical school. Many schools do that in the third year of school when students really enter the clinical phase. Mm-hmm. But we are developing a very rich environment. We have a wonderful director of our simulation center, a really rich environment for our students from the time they get to medical school to be involved in that type of environment. And so we actually call the clinical pieces of the curriculum the clinical suite, because there are several components. There's that doc course. Mm-hmm. There's CLIC, which is where the students are immersed in the community. And then the other piece, which I mentioned before, which was the clinical home, where right. our students go to one of our four major teaching hospitals, and they're introduced to the hospital system.
Okay, great. Thank you. Dr. Thatcher, what is the difference between the clinical immersion and the transformation stages of your curriculum? That would be stages 2 and 3. And at some point, I'd like to learn more about what entrustment is. That's the fourth phase. But let's talk more. Actually, Dr. Rose, you touched on it earlier, but can you go into a little bit more specificity about what's the difference there?
So first of all, I think we want to just get the stages right. Stage 2 is clinical immersion.
And transformation is stage 3, right?
That's right. That's stage 3. The end is actually graduation entrustment. And so you may have heard that there, so the AAMC and others that actually started in the GME world have developed what are called EPAs. Mm-hmm. We didn't create this acronym. It was created outside of our school. Those are entrustable professional activities. Those are actually tasks that define a profession. And we actually have based our curriculum on 3 documents, one being those entrustable professional activities that have been defined by the AANC for end of medical school training to prepare a student so a student is ready on day 1 for residency. So that's why we call that entrustment, because then the students are entrusted to be a resident. So that's uh-huh. kind of where that language comes.
Okay. All right, great.
Does that answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, so as Susie had mentioned, that the EPAs are one of the documents that we're using that's been recommended by the AAMC, and we're developing milestones. And throughout the process over the next few years, as we really fully develop this program, we will have a portfolio that will help a student collect skills and artifacts throughout their education and be able to present to us in their fourth year that they've able to meet the competencies of what we expect for graduation and to make sure that they're ready for internship and their residency. So that's a program that we are further developing as we move along.
Okay. Why? Why this radical rethinking, reshaping of the medical school curriculum at UConn? Dr. Rose, you want to start with that one? What's the goal?
I actually think that Well, the goal is for us to be able to provide the best providers to take care of our patients and communities in Connecticut and throughout the country and the world. That's really it's a pretty lofty goal. And, you know, medical students over centuries are really smart, and they're going to get the curriculum and they're going to get what they have to do. But what we're trying to do is really set the stage for them to accomplish certain goals that may not have been accomplished in a traditionally lecture-based curriculum. One of them being working in teams from the get-go. So they come here, they're part of a team. The other is they can't just sit here and be a sponge. They're very good at being sponges, but what we need them to do is be actively involved in not only their own education, but in the education of their peers. And so our 22 contact hours are required attendance. You have to be here, because if you're not here and a team is, whether it's 7 or 10, depending on what course you're in, and you're not here, you know, 6 people are gone and one person's at the table, you're not going to contribute to the education of that person. So, you know, there are some additional goals that we have, you know, not just the active learning, creating lifelong learners. I'm really interested in individualized learning and making sure that students learn at their own pace and are able to move forward when they're able to move forward and don't go forward until they really get those rigorous standards down. But it also reinvigorates the faculty. I think that this whole process for us was a great process of self-reflection, of a project for the faculty to really get excited, to feel passionate about their role in educating this next generation. And so there are a lot of positives that have come out of this, not just for the student and ultimately for the patients and communities that they serve, but also for the faculty and for our staff.
Like what?
Well, first of all, we have an outstanding staff that are actually aligned in teams as well. So they help role model for the students how to work, you know, as a group together. And I think that they really enjoy that piece. But we also give our staff tremendous responsibilities. As an example, we have one staff member who leads our focus groups. We have other staff members that develop our faculty retreats and the forums that we have. We're undergoing our accreditation process right now, and our staff are taking a major leadership role in helping us organize that and helping us sort of troubleshoot some of the issues that we're trying to examine. And, you know, we're involved in sort of helping our staff with their own personal and professional development as well. And it helps, I think, create a collaborative team environment that makes coming to work a lot of fun.
That sounds good. Sounds good. Well, definitely, I'm sure any listener to this podcast will hear your own enthusiasm, all of your enthusiasms for the new curriculum. Dr. Regan, we haven't heard much from you. How is this new curriculum influencing admissions decisions at UConn?
I think it's interesting that Dr. Rose and Dr. Thatcher keep on emphasizing that working in teams is the model for healthcare delivery now and in the future. So back in the 20, 30 years ago, you could be a private practitioner, hang out your shingle, and there you go, you have your practice. But now it's small groups or large groups, hospital groups all working together. And so the big question is, how do you get students prepared for this kind of healthcare environment? And the big thing is working within teams. How do you teach a medical student to be a vibrant team member, to be an active team leader? And that's what TBL has kind of shown us how to do this. And I kind of emphasize that when students come here, when applicants come here, for interviews, I tell them this is kind of a different kind of atmosphere that we have here. It's a different kind of medical school that you'd be going to in terms of we'll be functioning as team members. We truly believe that education and learning is a social activity. It's good learning is done collaboratively and socially. It's not competitive and isolated. And they have to make this shift from being in college and being, you know, very competitive and getting the best grades, and they're basically competing against their peers. In medical school, that's different. It's a professional school, and we're trying to teach them how to be physicians. And I'll tell you, being a physician, I don't compete against my other physicians. I have to take my boards every 10 years to be an emergency medicine physician. I don't really care what the chair of emergency medicine got on his boards when he passed it. I just want to pass mine. I want to do well on it because it's all about the patient. That means I want to do well in order to be successful to treat patients. And that's what we're trying to teach students here when they come here. And I try to teach that to the applicants when they're here. We actually have them do a mini TBL when they come here, just to see what it's like to be in a team dynamic.
You mean as an applicant when they come, like for an interview day, they do a mini TBL?
They do. We actually have I'm hoping that they went to our site, our UConn Medical School site, because we populated it with all types of information about TBL and team-based learning, because that is our environment here. And when they come here on interview day, I stress it again, and we have a mini TBL in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I break them up into groups, and we kind of go through TBL. And I said, you know, if you like working in teams, if you like being collaborative, this is the place for you. This is a great environment. It's the culture of UConn. But if you're a competitive person and you need that competitive edge, you might not like it here.
Right.
You know, it might be miserable for 4 years. So I try to really emphasize that this is a new curriculum, and that it really is contributing to the culture that's here at UConn. And that's hopefully will give them a better understanding about our institution when they come for interview day.
Are you also like weighing heavily the amount of teamwork experiences they've had in the past, whether it's in sports and community service and clinical environments, arts, whatever?
Yeah, we find that obviously we want them to be academically very qualified. Successful,
right.
and just to succeed here. But when we look at an applicant, we're looking at them holistically. And some things we want to know about them when they apply is, have they investigated the healthcare environment? Did they do any shadowing? Have they been exposed to the healthcare field? Why do they want to become a physician? That's an important part, but that's pretty much what every medical school is looking for. And then we're looking for other things, such as, have they been active on their campus? Have they been active in whatever passion they might have? Have they assumed leadership positions in some of those? They don't have to be leaders in all of them, but you know, if they went the extra effort and really became a leader or tried to be in a position where they're working within a team, we look very favorably on that.
Okay, great. As you look at applicants and applications, should applicants to UConn have both clinical and research experience in their background, publications, clinical exposure? I mean, are there any activities that you really want to see?
That's what I hear from applicants all the time.
I'm
what
sure.
are the check boxes that I need to check off in order to make sure I get into medical school? And I tell them it's not that black and white. We want them, I think the biggest thing that we want them to do is, have they explored the healthcare field?
Of course.
Do they know what they're getting into? The worst thing we can do is have someone come here and find out that they do not like healthcare and they're going to be miserable here being a physician. So we'd like to see that they have done some healthcare, have been exposed to some healthcare. It could be anything. Their parents could be physicians. I know my kids, my wife's a physician. I know my kids are being inundated with medicine, either for a positive or negative effect that might have on them. But also, they might have had, you know, talk about that in your application. If you've had a significant illness, we've had some people, especially people that do sports, they've had exposure to physicians when they go to rehab, they've been exposed to different parts of healthcare field. That's an important thing to that we know they've had some exposure. It's not all about just shadowing a physician. Have they? Do they know what it's like to be in the healthcare field? That's an important thing. And then we look at other things. If they've done research, that's great. Were they passionate about it? Did they like mm-hmm. it? Did they give it a no thank you taste and said, you know what, I looked at research, I really don't like it, I'm much more clinically oriented. That's great. Not all of us are researchers. Or people who have worked in the community. That's an important thing as well. But we want to know that they've gone to college and really experienced not only medicine in the healthcare field, but other avenues, because it makes them a much better holistic applicant, because then they'll be a much better holistic physician and be able to relate to their patients later on when they become physicians.
Okay, that's a great answer. Thank you. When we spoke last week, and Dr. Rios, you mentioned this a couple minutes ago, I noticed a strong public health focus at UConn. Can you comment on that? Dr. Rose, do you want to start with that one?
I've been here for almost 6 years now, and I think there's a much longer history of a commitment to public health in the community. You know, we're a public university. Our students have always been involved in the community, and as part of education, we have a community-based education program that involves, the local schools and the local community. We actually engage our students during the orientation piece and visiting the community and really knowing that they are a part of Hartford and the greater Hartford area. We're actually situated outside the city of Hartford, kind of in a suburban area, but we try to make sure that our students really get the idea that the city, the suburbs, this whole area is really a part of the communities that they're going to be taking care of for the 4 years that they're here. We have a very strong focus with our interprofessional partners here, and we have some very wonderful and creative faculty members who have created a course in our old curriculum that focused on public health. And in transforming our new curriculum, we really took some time to think about how do we engage public health, current events, issues that may affect patients, communities, things that are in the news, healthcare reform, all that kind of information into a platform. And our faculty got really excited about collaborating with our graduate school and creating this public health certificate. It really focuses on healthcare disparities. That's the main focus of the certificate. Mm-hmm. But we've been able to take some of our integrated coursework over the Vitals course, along with project work that they might be doing over 3 years, to be able to have all of our students eligible for this public health certificate. So we're really proud of that accomplishment. We think it makes us somewhat unique amongst other schools. And I think it sends a strong message to our students that we care about the health of the public.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I just want to, emphasize that the faculty have done a really nice job of aligning the content in the graduate courses that are normally taught in the certificate to the curriculum that we have now, and we are tracking to make sure that the students are meeting the same criteria as they would if they were just purely in the graduate school program. So I think it's a really strong certificate, and I think it's something that the students can be really proud of.
Great. Thank you. And actually, the next question is going to be first for you, but then Dr. Rose or Dr. Regan, if you want to add, feel free. I was talking last week with a medical school professor, and he expressed concern that students, this was not a professor at UConn, this is just a professor out there, that students are focused on preparing for the Step 1 exam, given how heavily it's weighed by residency programs from day one. In his words, students are just going into test prep mode from day one and skipping the curriculum. All they want are study tools. What they're missing is the career prep value in the first 2 years. Things like clinical reasoning and professionalism are at least as important as Step 1 for their clerkships and residencies. Do you share that assessment? And how is UConn dealing with this concern? Dr. Thatcher, I think you probably most directly, since your field is assessment, and some of the curriculum and the planning in the curriculum I know is geared towards preparing your students for Step 1 and the other step exams. Do you want to answer that one first?
Sure. I think a lot of what he said is true. I think the students are very concerned about how well they will do on the boards. There has been an increased emphasis on how well students do with the boards, especially if they're thinking about specialties. Mm-hmm. And I think that puts a lot of pressure on them. And I think if you look at the curriculum we're transitioning out of, you'll see evidence of that in the second year curriculum, where students are not coming to the lectures the way they did in their first year. So, for instance, in a class of 150 students, you may, on any day in April, see maybe 5 or 6 students in that auditorium because the lectures were not required. We we record them. And so it's not that the students aren't doing the curriculum, but they're choosing to watch those lectures on video where they can fast forward and or slow it down and take notes at their own pace. And so what the new curriculum does is it brings the students into the classroom to work on application of clinical ideas that are related to the basic science, and it's not straight lecture the way we did in the past. So part of the appeal, I think, in the innovation of the new curriculum is that the students will be much more engaged. Now, we haven't experienced the second year of our new curriculum yet. We don't know what's going to happen in the fall with our students who start to approach the boards, but we're hoping that they feel that they are prepared. We will be administering a practice test to the students so that they can have a better idea of how well they're doing. We also have a preparatory course that we offer both in the older curriculum, and we're developing something now for the new curriculum for next year. We do have students that come in their very first year and proudly state to a professor, guess what, I've already bought my step one prep book and I'm already starting to study. And to that we usually grimace and say, you know what, it's a little bit too soon for that. It's not it's not appropriate because you need to really learn the basics and not worry so much about the test. We will not teach to the test, but we do make sure that we are meeting the USMLE hot topics that are included in the test, and we do have faculty here who write for that exam. So I think we're doing a very good job of preparing the students for the exam, and I think we have the right attitude towards how we prepare students for that exam, but we do not focus on it.
I would just want to add that I think this is a national problem, and, yes. And you know, as part of the AMA consortium, it's something that we've discussed at the consortium meetings. One way to tackle it is to try to get our education colleagues in the GME world not to use the test for ways that it was not intended. So there's really no reason why a residency program should be using an absolute score to choose who's good to filter out who they're going to interview for a residency program. You know, other options have been considered, including whether it could be a pass-fail exam. And I know that that's been considered in the past. Our dental students take a pass-fail board exam, and they seem to be more relaxed than our dental students are. I think this has to be explored on a national level. But I wanted to just make one thing, like, really clear, and that is that we do not teach to the boards. We expect our students to be successful on the boards, but again, our focus is to teach them to be the best doctors that they can be. We do not want to graduate students that can't be licensed to practice medicine. So it's a very practical issue to make sure that they're successful on that. And one of our approaches, as Dr. Thatcher mentioned, is to take that as a separate, to take it as a separate issue and a separate competency, to be able to pass an exam like that, that is, you know, you need to know a large volume of information as well as apply it to clinical scenarios.
Okay, great. Thank you. This is for all of you. What advice would any of you have for applicants considering applying to medical school, specifically to UConn, in this upcoming application cycle, the 2017-18 application cycle?
You sure that's to everyone?
Well, I'd like you to start.
We're giving it to Tom.
I can start. I think a couple things people should understand is just the first thing, and that is know when the due dates are, know when things open. Getting your stuff in on time, getting it done early. I think that's what I keep telling my kids, and they just entered college. I'm like, get it in on time.
Yeah.
Because during the beginning of the cycle, we look at a lot of, you know, we look at 3,000 applications we're reviewing. We give out 300 interviews, roughly. So
you have 98 spots, right? 99, 98, something like that?
We have 100 spots.
Yeah.
We have 100 spots. So when we're initially looking holistically at each of these applicants, the ones that are there on time, we're looking at them first, and we're probably looking very favorably, thinking, oh, we have 300 spots that we can send out. So at the very beginning, we might be a little bit more lenient and towards some minor flaws that they might have in their application. Towards the end, it's when spots are getting less and less, there'll be less interviews, invitations going out because because there's just not as many left anymore. So that's my biggest piece of advice I can give to people is get it in early, get it in on time. That's a big thing to do. And everything else, how much time do you have?
Well, I think you wanted to end at 10 minutes up, so we have about 5 minutes left.
I could go talking for 5 days if you want to about good things that we like in medical students. I think here for UConn, we're looking holistically. We want them to be strong in academics, but if you think about our profile, the people that we admit here, people think they need to come in immediately from college. Spick and span, they've made the decision first or second year in college, and they're all kind of tied up with a bow in the fourth year. And that's not true. We actually look at non-traditional applicants as well. In fact, I like looking at non-traditional applicants because I think they have a little more world experience. I think they can relate better to their colleagues here in medical school, and also when they'll add diversity to our student body here as well. So about maybe 33 to 40% of people we take straight from college, but we take other people who've taken a year off, maybe to do some research or to be in AmeriCorps or to explore something, some other passion they might have. It's the last time in their life they can do that, and a lot of them decide to do it then, and they shouldn't think that that's going to ding them. In fact, that will probably enhance them as a different kind of applicant, as a diversified applicant. Also, people that decided to enter medicine late, maybe in their junior or senior year, it's okay to take a year off, take a post-bac course, take a master's course, get those requirements in. We won't look at you any worse. In fact, you're a diversity candidate. You can only add to the student body. So those people we really like seeing as well. And then there's the ones that kind of took a little bit longer to figure out what college is all like, and they might have stumbled the first couple of years, and then they decide to take a post-bac and improve themselves. We also look at those applicants. We know that college isn't for everyone. We all mature at a different rate. But if you didn't do well in college, but then you proved yourself with a post-bac year or extended studies after that, and showed that you had a commitment to the medical field and explored it a little bit more, you know, we're not adverse to giving second chances. We know people stumble, and to me, those people have recovered, and they really show a certain amount of character that they can identify their problem and then come up with an answer how to solve it and make themselves a better applicant. So we're not looking for traditional applications in all areas. What we're looking for holistically is a very diverse field of students that we'll have here in our class, and each can share their experiences with each other in a team-based collaborative atmosphere.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Dr. Rose and Dr. Thatcher, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, I can say that I was at what we called in those days a bent arrow. Didn't take the straight path from medical school, but I took 4 years off before I went to medical school. I think that a lot of students think that they have to kind of follow that straight path, but sometimes having that additional experience adds to maturity, gives you a different perspective, and it's really, you know, follow your passion and just do it well, and that's kind of what we're looking for. We're looking for leadership across lots of different areas, whether it's in sports, whether it's in research, whether it's in advocacy, in teaching, that we just have a very diverse student body here, and it works for us. They get along great, and they enhance each other's learning experience, and I think that's what's really important.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
I agree. I think the students really learn from each other. It's wonderful.
That's great. Dr. Rose, Dr. Thatcher, Dr. Regan, I think we're almost out of time. This has been fascinating and delightful. Where can listeners learn more about UConn Medical and MDelta?
Well, you can reach out to us, but I think probably the easiest way is to go to our website. It's uchc.edu. You can just search for the School of Medicine, MDelta, or Academic Educational Affairs, and you'll find information. We have videos from our curricular leaders, and we have diagrams and brochures about our curriculum.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll include links in the show notes at exhibit.com/199 to UConn Medical, its innovative curriculum, as well as to other resources that may be helpful to listeners. Listener, thank you for joining us for our 199th episode. If you found the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.